That may have been one of the best walks I had ever experienced in my life. I felt immortal. I felt perfectly content with where I was in my life and in the universe at that moment. I had nothing. Nowhere to be, no responsibilities, no one to answer to. Just all the time in the world to be alone with my own thoughts. This was what the world had turned me into. This was all I could ask for, and all I wanted. It was quite sad in a sense. I didn't even want anybody to share these precious moments with. But I was just a product of what this society had created. I had become what it had wanted and what it had expected. And when I realized I wasn't happy with it, I rebelled to an extreme degree which left me worn out and broken. I've always had a bad tendency of overthinking and overanalyzing everything. Over the years, I've been able to teach myself to filter out what I actually pay attention to, for the most part, because otherwise my thoughts would certainly consume all my time and energy. Act without thinking may sound foolish, but I've learned that in certain times it does stand as the best advice. Not always, and I'm sure several people would be quick to disagree with the principle entirely, but when it reaches the point where you overthink every single action or move you make, it leads you nowhere. There becomes an extent where you just have to lose yourself in the moment and take action without any regard or concern for anything else. Live your one life with reckless abandon and with no regrets. Of course, even to this day, some of these thoughts still become too overwhelmingly difficult for me to comprehend or simply let go of. There are still some which continue to eat away at my sanity, no matter how hard I try to just let them go, and these unusual thoughts which continue to lie in the back of my mind somewhere frighten me at times. I found myself starting to feel lonely, but I knew I had no one to blame but myself for that. Nevertheless, I needed to find some company, I decided. As I came to the other edge of the park, I could significantly notice the rising waves from the single hit of ecstasy I had consumed beginning to overtake me. It was a golden time to be a drug user. The accepting attitude adapted by the acid parties and rave scene culture had provided a completely revolutionized perspective and acceptance of perception-altering chemicals. MDMA had taken the world by storm as an unmatchable substance, and ultimately became labeled as the drug of my generation, just as acid had been during the counterculture movement of the 1960s. Additionally, leaps and bounds in the field of chemistry had paved the way to a whole new arsenal of research chemicals, which developing laws simply could not keep up with. Many of these legal research chemicals rivaled even the most illicit substances in terms of euphoria and inner awakening. I noticed a bar on the edge of a creek a couple of blocks farther down the street. I thought that might be an appropriate place to find some company, and so I made my way to the front doors. The name on the sign said O'Reilly's. I slowly approached the large wooden double doors. I was unable to see inside through the murky windows, which were covered in a thick layer of dirt from both sides, looking as if they hadn't been cleaned in years. I was unable to tell if any of the lights were even on, or if the place was even still open for business. The wood was rotting and the bricks were noticeably aged. Paint flaked off the door. Maintenance clearly wasn't a priority at this place that looked like it had been abandoned for quite some time, and I was hesitant about even trying to get in. Regardless, something inside me ordered to reach out and grab the rusted brass ring handle, giving the door a powerful pull. I was in utter shock when it actually swung open, greeting me with a damp, pungent smell. I couldn't see anything for a brief moment as my eyes adjusted to the dim lighting, but I continued inside anyways, the heavy door slamming closed behind me. It was a relatively small establishment, with only a few tables, some stools for sitting at the bar, and a single pool table, and a television mounted on the wall. A few men sat at the stools, and one man sat alone at one of the tables in a corner behind them. He was hidden in the shadows and seemed to be sitting completely still, while the others at the bar drank, laughed, and shared stories together. The only sources of light penetrating this otherwise black dungeon came translucently through the dirt-covered windows and from a single light hanging from above the bar. The rest of the lights had burnt out and had been left unchanged. As I made my way over, very slowly, past the tables, I noticed many cobwebs and a thick layer of dust covering the floor and windowsills. The bar and tables themselves seemed clean enough, but this was a place that was obviously not concerned with their upkeep. There was one door located to the left of the bar, which I assumed to be the bathroom. I could only imagine the state it must be in. I eventually reached the bar and took a seat at one of the available stools, promptly ordering a Budweiser and two shots of Jack Daniels while trying to gauge the other men's reaction to my sudden appearance. I sensed my abrupt and uninvited arrival had caused a disturbance amongst them, as if I was interrupting them or intruding. They appeared to be older. I guess they were in their 50s, or maybe early 60s. The bartender looked like your classic old-school hippie, with long gray hair that he wore back in a ponytail, and a black leather biker vest, which he wore over top of his shirt, urgently fulfilling my request, placing my desired drinks in front of me. I thanked him, then followed that up immediately with a cheers, turning to raise a shot glass towards the stranger sitting beside me, before quickly sipping it down, praying inside that I wasn't about to be shot. My attempt to strike up conversation was greeted mainly by grumbling from the others. The one man I had taken a seat next to looked at me, giving me a cold, intimidating stare. I didn't care. I felt invincible. I had dealt with every kind of person there was in the world. At least I thought so. I had already come to the conclusion I couldn't be harmed. I just gave him the exact same cold stare right back. "You're not from around here, are you?" he finally asked, cracking half a smile which helped relax me a little. His voice was hoarse and rough, and the cigarette he held in his hand could confirm that years of smoking had taken their toll on his body. I withdrew a pack of Marlboros from my own pocket, placing one between my lips. I shook my head while lighting it, before exhaling a thick cloud of tobacco smoke. "What's your name?" he asked, and I responded truthfully but in a flat tone, unconcerned. "Clyde," he repeated back to me. "You lost?" I couldn't help but give a quick laugh at the inquiry, and shook my head again. "No," I replied with a smile. "I really can't be lost. There's really nowhere I need to be." The men exchanged looks with each other. "Look," the man sitting beside me continued, "this place is like a home to us, and quite frankly, we're not generally very fond of outsiders. This godforsaken world has taken everything we once had. This bar is all we have left. The government and society calls us criminals and treats us like murderers and rapists. It's honestly better for us to just stay confined in here, in our own little community of sorts, and it's probably for the best if you just stay away. We share a simple understanding. We've been to hell and back, and all we want is this bar to serve as our own sanctuary, an escape from all the gruesome realities of the outside world. Most people can't seem to wrap their minds around that concept." Eventually, he stopped talking. I sat there in silence for a moment, nodding, taking in all he had to say. I felt like I was able to relate, for I too had seen the extent of how cruel and heartless this world could be on several different occasions, when all I wanted to do was find love. I sensed I should pick my next plan of action and set of words extremely carefully. Clearly, the bartender wasn't about to get in the way of anything, if I said the wrong thing or otherwise pissed these gentlemen off. "I think I understand," I finally said slowly with a sigh. "Look, I'm just an innocent traveler and a writer. I just arrived in San Francisco not even an hour ago, and I'm just looking for a place to get grounded, center, collect my bearings, and maybe achieve a decent buzz. Maybe you guys have stories you want to share?" Once again, the three men exchanged the same look. "I work for a magazine," I quickly explained. "I'm always interested in hearing about other people's experiences. I feel like we all have the potential to learn much more by simply talking to each other than we even realize. After all, it's our individual life stories as a collective whole that make up our world. Everyone has their story." "What in the fuck are you talking about?" one of the men farther down finally interjected. I could tell I had taken enough of their time. The bartender finally leaned over the bar so that his face was close to mine. "You want to hear stories?" he asked me in a slow, scratchy voice. The knife scars on his face suggested that I was in the presence of a rough crowd who could promptly disassemble me in an instant if they so desired to. I would just have to take their word that they were indeed good people. Not that I really cared. Of all the people I had met in my time, it had been my experience that those society labeled as the shadiest or the sketchiest, losers and outcasts, the drug addicts and dealers, the artists, the criminals, were often the most genuine and sincere, holding on to the best values of anyone I knew. At least they stood up for what they believed in, even if it deviated from the social norm. In my encounters, they seemed to be the ones that were most in tune with how the world operated around them, and how we so greatly affect one another. Aware that we all have our own problems, instead of being so caught up and consumed in materialistic worlds of their own, like the inevitable trap so many others fall victim to in this ruthless day and age, those who are controlled by consumerism and the almighty dollar. I rarely fear people. Stereotypes and negative government propaganda have been fueled by the media for decades and vice versa. I myself have been through some pretty dark times, but no matter how low I've sunk, I've never resorted to robbing people for drug money or anything of that sort. I felt that for the most part, I could usually see people's true intentions and into their souls, past their outside avatars and disguises. I understood that deep down, most of us all shared the same basic desires to be loved and accepted. The bartender continued in his low, hushed tone. "Talk to that man over there," he said, motioning with his head to the lone man sitting in the shadows at the table in the corner, enjoying his own place and time, lost in his own zone, secluded from the rest of the world. His name's Wicket, Arthur Wicket, and goddamn does he have some stories to tell. He's seen it all in his days. He pretty much just keeps to himself now, but if you can get him to talk, I'm sure he'd be able to give you something interesting to write about. As the last words fell from his mouth, a peculiar silence fell over the bar and a shiver ran down my spine. I peered towards the corner but saw nothing except the darkness. Nothing could have prepared me. I turned back to the bar and took a deep breath. "Okay," I muttered to myself, "sure, what the hell, what could go wrong? Can I get one last shot?" The bartender nodded and quickly threw a shot glass in front of me with the caramel-colored liquor inside, advising me that it was on the house and wishing me good luck. I quickly downed the shot and continued to sit there in hesitation for what felt like an eternity, but in reality was only a few seconds. Finally, I forced myself to muster up the courage to stand and walk very slowly over to the darkness. I knew if I didn't just get up and do it then, that I never would. I couldn't actually see the table until the last second. The certain angle that I approached at, along with the darkness, obscured and clouded everything. Once I finally did manage to make out the silhouette of the table, I had to squint to see the hooded figure sitting, facing me. There was a seat across from him which I quickly sat down in. I stared across the table at the concealed man. I still couldn't make out his face, and could only assume that he was staring back at me. I felt a fairly neutral indifference inside of me. I had no reaction of fear or panic yet at the same time I felt no empathy for this clearly tortured man either. I approached the acquaintance totally numb, accepting that I had no idea or way of predicting what would happen, and how this man would respond to me. "My name is Clyde Hightower," I finally said to him emotionlessly, figuring it was as good a place to start as any. There was a sudden, small flash of light. The man had struck a match and was lighting a cigarette. He took a couple of drags and exhaled a cloud of thick tobacco smoke in my face. I squinted my eyes as they watered and strained to see through it. He then used the same match to light a candle that was sitting in the center of the table to provide us with dim lighting for our encounter, before extinguishing the initial flame. He lowered his hood, giving me the first opportunity to look upon his face. The first thing I noticed was his bright, vibrant gaze. His eyes were a piercing cold shade of blue, unlike anything I had ever seen before. These were eyes that reflected years of pain which had been captured throughout his lifetime. They had a certain look about them that said he had been worn out and broken, and had seen everything through them during his time on this planet. His dirty blonde hair ran down past his shoulders, and his face was cleanly shaven. He looked slightly younger than the other men, but still older than myself. I was told you might have some interesting stories to share with me, I said with an underlying tone of caution in my voice, completely unsure of how to continue. For a moment, he simply met me with a blank stare, as if to say, stop wasting my time. I work for a magazine, I tried again, fighting against the discouragement I was feeling, and hoping I could make him bend to my unexpected request. The man turned his head, looking over towards the barn windows. It looked like he was trying to choose his next set of words carefully as well. I could only wonder what was about to escape his lips. Eventually, he turned back to me. Well, I can sure give you something to write about, if that's what you really want, he answered in a deep, hoarse voice. But how can I be sure you're worthy of it? I'm sorry, I replied, taken aback by the question for a moment. Look, he continued, I've seen some pretty unbelievable things over the course of my lifetime, and by no means do I have a problem sharing such things with the right people. He trailed off and the two of us sat in silence for a moment. The other men, sitting away from us at the bar, had seemed to have already forgotten about my arrival and had gone ahead and resumed their previous conversation, holding no regard for whatever drug-induced gibberish two lost souls had to discuss with each other. But the man suddenly snapped back to his original train of thought, breaking the pressuring silence. Others are unable to handle it. You see, the things I'm able to show you have the potential to greatly change your life, and are not for the weak of mind or soul. They could frighten you, or they could fascinate you. They might be both. It's impossible to say. They may make you feel certain feelings you never even knew existed. They may make you even doubt your own reality or existence. For me, it's all just been another step in my everlasting, ongoing pursuit of enlightenment. I was intrigued to say the least, although I felt completely lost. I'm sorry, I said again. What unbelievable things have you seen in your life? Don't get me wrong, I'm sure you've experienced a lot. But who are you to compare that to what others have seen or been through? I mean, I would probably say that I've been through a lot that no one else could ever understand. The man sat there for a moment, clearly caught up in his own deep thought process. I really can't explain it, he finally said. It's just something you would have to experience for yourself to ever understand. Just be aware that there are some places that simply can't compare to the society we're used to. Silence again. The small flame danced and flickered as wax slowly ran down the side of the candle and projected shadows which jumped about the walls. You mean in other countries? I asked slowly, desperately attempting to wrap my head around what he was saying and arrive at a logical answer. He slowly shook his head. Different realms altogether, he said. I gave him a doubting look. Part of me felt like he was telling me nothing but lies, and that he was a delirious man desperately seeking attention and company. Yet the gaze I received in return seemed to suggest he understood why I might feel this way, and that whatever he had to share with me might be slightly more significant than I could have ever fathomed. Surely I could relate to what it felt like to have people assume you're insane, so I decided to go along with it for the time. But again, he pressed and echoed, I'm not sure that you're necessarily an appropriate candidate to see what I have to show you. It really can be overwhelming physically, mentally, and emotionally if you aren't prepared, and it isn't for everyone. Now this kook was starting to get on my nerves. I was actually beginning to feel insulted by what he was saying, like he was calling my abilities into question. I knew he wasn't trying to do that intentionally, but he just kept yammering on like an idiot. Different realms, I thought to myself, fuck is this guy on? I tried to avoid judging people unfairly, but this guy wasn't even making any sense. I would have probably gotten up and left, but the other gentleman at the bar whom I had spoken to had been so convincing. Arthur was clearly trying to look out for my best interest, but I maintained the notion I could do that for myself. I'm curious, I confessed to him. I can take you, but you'll have to prove yourself worthy before we enter, he replied. I was starting to get downright pissed off. Prove myself worthy? Who did this guy think he was? Nevertheless, I decided to continue playing along. How? I asked him. I can't say for sure, it's a little different for everybody, but probably some sort of religious ritual, Arthur answered. That's what it was like for me anyways. We'll have to meet up with someone when we get there, a guard of sorts that'll lead you through everything. I still didn't know what he was talking about, and the whole thing sounded preposterous to me. For a moment I questioned my decision-making skills, if I was willing to follow this stranger to God knows where, but I reminded myself that I had originally set out looking for excitement and adventure, and this man seemed to offer that. How far is this place exactly? Seemed to be the next most logical question to ask, and we continued to sit and finish our drinks. He shrugged. Well, we'll need to drive a couple of hours, then we'll have to walk for about an hour, and then we may even need to boat for a few minutes, but we'll see when we get there. It's a couple hours south. I didn't really care. I'd have peace of mind as long as I could collect my possessions from my car before leaving. I told Arthur that, and he agreed we'd stop before leaving the city. He looked like he wanted to say more, but he didn't. There was a look of concern behind his eyes. He smoked his cigarette until it had burned down to the filter, leaving the butt in the glass ashtray on the table. Do you want to go? He asked in a sincere tone, and I did. Arthur took cash from his back pocket and tucked it under the corner of the ashtray, presumably for drinks, and then stood to lead the way. I stopped to pay the bartender directly on our way out, and then we proceeded down the sidewalk to Arthur's car. In addition to the various assortment of drugs I already had running through my system from the previous 24 hours, the alcohol that I had just consumed at the bar put me on a completely unique plane of consciousness. My new friend unlocked his vehicle and we both got in. Before I could even respond to what was going on, we had already stopped at my car and I had picked up my belongings before speeding off down the street in Arthur's car once again. I had navigated and given directions to Arthur until we reached my vehicle and I was able to retrieve my laptop and suitcase. Once I had my things, my mind felt at ease just like I had expected, and I didn't really care where I was about to be taken. Prepare yourself, Arthur warned me as we sped off down the road, the tires screeching as they left my car in the distance. As I sat in the passenger seat, the reality of my situation started to sink in. I realized that I actually had no idea where this stranger was dragging me, and that I was entirely at his mercy now. My first thought was, my God, I've been kidnapped. I stared at the driver with a paranoid look in my eye, wondering how I could let myself be so foolish, but I quickly shook the thought from my mind. No, I reassured myself, what would anybody want with me? I was just a nobody with nothing to offer. There would have been absolutely no point whatsoever in kidnapping me. Come on, I told myself. Get a grip, man. Just maintain composure. This is what Journey is supposed to be all about. Brand new experiences and people. Taking risks and, in doing so, exploring and expanding my own mind based on the experiences others are able to share. I'm getting exactly what I asked for, so I guess I might as well try to relax and make the most of it. However, the mere fact that I was unsure of where I was being taken provided a slight, constant discomfort deep within the back of my mind. Just relax, Arthur assured me. He must have sensed the tension I was feeling, but even I must admit that I found it difficult to dwell on these negative thoughts for very long when I felt as good as I did in my current state of mind. The man drove through the streets of the cultural epicenter while my mind raced through the entire range of motions. I certainly felt lost, but that didn't bother me much. It was nothing new in my world, just par for the course. I was used to being lost, although I never really thought of it that way. I had always said that there was no designated place I was meant to be, and therefore I could never really be lost. Yet here I was, trying to achieve a fresh start. I had arrived at my intended destination not even an hour earlier, and here I was already being dragged away by someone I didn't know, unable to even faintly fathom what lied in store for me. I couldn't quite place my finger on it, but I felt as if something within me was telling me I could trust this man. As he drove, Arthur played with the dials on the radio, becoming seemingly content upon finding a Bob Dylan classic like a Rolling Stone. He then proceeded to withdraw his pack of cigarettes once again, taking one in his mouth before offering me the pack, which I gladly accepted. I took a single cigarette for myself and then handed it back. Up to this point, I felt I had been too distracted, too occupied for the most part, taking in my surroundings. Everything seemed new to me. I found it completely remarkable how substantially cultures could change across only a few miles of this land. I had seen so many different atmospheres during my time traveling across the country, and so far San Francisco was, by far, my favorite. There was a certain traditional sense of the lifestyle this place had been founded upon. America was so often referred to as the land of the great land of opportunity, and this state had strived to be the national symbol and proverbial pinnacle of that, a place where anybody, from any walk of life, had an equal chance at making it to fame, fortune, and success. California in general was a very iconic and historical place of our country, and as I wandered the streets, the bars, the stores, the scenery, the people, it all fascinated me. Arthur made his way through the city, and finally turned onto a freeway that ran along the edge of a cliff and coasted south, through the light traffic and down the shoreline of the west coast. To our right lied the drop-off of the cliff, perhaps 2 or 3 feet away at the most from the right tires, and only a small, thin steel guardrail acted as a barricade. My heart began to pound slightly faster as Arthur took a curve full speed. One slip and there would be no possible way that thin strip of steel could keep the speeding ton of metal that we were in from careening over the side. A 90-degree drop and a 200-foot fall to the bottom, where the great Pacific Ocean then stretched out towards the horizon, full of mystery and wonder, waves crashing up against the jagged rocks below. It was a picture-perfect afternoon. The temperature sat at a comfortable 82 degrees, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. The only wind was a breeze we could feel, driving fast down the interstate in Arthur's convertible with the top lowered, and the sun reflecting off the water, glistening as the birds called out and circled above. For the moment, this certainly did feel like the fresh start I had needed. Maybe I should have paid closer attention to the warning that Arthur had tried giving me when we had been back at the bar, and maybe I should have taken him more seriously. I couldn't even begin to fathom what the rest of my day held in store. We continued driving along for quite some time, getting to know each other better along the way. The man told me about how he had grown up on the streets of California, and how his parents had both been murdered when he was young. The deep-rooted bitterness that we each seemed to feel towards the rest of the world in general, as a result of our childhoods, was just one of the similarities that we shared right off the bat. "I fucking hate this world," he sighed, as we turned off the freeway and made our ways down a side street. "People only care about themselves and their own happiness. That's why these days I'm so hesitant about who I give my trust and respect to, but I don't know, I just have a promising feeling about you." "I'm flattered," I joked. "I'm serious, Clyde," he continued. "The way you carry yourself and present yourself, you sort of remind me of myself at a younger age. But what I have to show you is reserved for a very exclusive handful of people, and I sincerely hope you don't let us down." God, I was getting sick of listening to this guy. And what did he mean, let us down? There was no way I was going to be able to stand being alone in a car with this man indefinitely if he was going to keep talking to me condescendingly like this. It was really bothering me more than it should, and I decided I might as well confront him about it before we went any farther. "Look, I don't know who you are or where you're taking me, but have at least a little faith in me. You're the one who dragged me off to wherever the hell it is you want to show me. I don't even know where we're going." "I'm sorry," Arthur apologized immediately. "I don't mean to sound like I doubt you, and I promise things will make much more sense once we actually get there. We just have to be careful." Careful of what, is what I wanted to ask him, but I didn't. Maybe I was too terrified of what the answer might be. Either way, we both just kind of dropped the topic and we soon reached the outskirts of whichever town we are now in, eventually turning down yet another quiet, dead-end road, coming to a stop at the end of a cul-de-sac where a large, thick, forested area stretched out in front of us. "We're here," he announced. "A forest?" I asked blankly as we stepped out of his vehicle and stretched. "Not just any forest," Arthur remarked with a humorous sense of excitement in his voice. "Just follow me, and stay close." And with that, he began to make his way across the narrow lawn and towards the trees. "We should hurry," he said, turning back to me. "We still have a long hike ahead of us." "You know," I said, taking one last chance to look back at the car as I jogged to catch up with him, and then stepped past the first few trees that outlined the edge of the woods, taking one final look at civilization as I knew it. Following a stranger into unfamiliar woods without telling anybody and having no idea myself where I'm really going doesn't seem like one of my best ideas. Arthur simply shrugged and retrieved a joint from his pocket as we ventured deeper into the thick covering that was the multitude of various trees. "And you know that I'd gain nothing from harming you," he answered with a smirk, lighting the joint and taking a few short hits before passing it to me. "If you trust me, I can show you something truly unique. Something you could never even come across in your wildest dreams or deepest drug-induced hallucinations. Essentially, the place I'm taking you is a piece of heaven located right here on Earth." Smoke escaped from my mouth and nose as I let the word sink in. I seriously doubted him. That was my first mistake. "Just be warned," he went on. "If you do return from this, you will most likely look at your life through entirely different eyes." I was growing more and more concerned as we continued on our way, but during the entire time I remained intrigued above all else. Still, I couldn't help myself from asking him just exactly what he meant by that. He answered in his same reassuring tone. "Don't worry, I simply meant if you choose to return, but let's just forget about that for now. You'll understand what I mean soon enough." Then, as we finished passing the joint back and forth, he quickly added, "Just enjoy the nature." As he spoke these words of comfort to me, I could feel they were genuine and sincere, and felt confident that regardless of whatever it was that I was about to rest my eyes on, I would be alright, emerging unharmed in the end.